Super Talk 94.1 FM and AM 930 WRVC present Tri-State Viewpoint. To join the program, call 304-399-8255 or toll free at 877-420-8255. Now, from the Kindred Capital Building in Huntington, Gene Dean and Bobby Nelson.
Hey, welcome to Tri-State Viewpoint, where the Tri-State comes to talk 5 days a week and the best talk show in the Tri-State by far. If you don't know,
absolutely.
Just ask us, Gene, right?
We'll tell you the truth.
And we have an exciting guest.
We have a lot
of give and take. And as a matter of fact, we have a couple really good, well-informed guests waiting
we
for
do,
your introduction.
We do, and we even have giveaways late on in the program.
Ah.
Our listeners usually like that. So we'll tell you about those in a little bit. But first of all, we have two guests that we'd love to have join us, and that's Dottie and Boz Johnson. Hello, Dottie.
Hello, Gene.
And Boz, how are you?
I'm here. Did you notice that I was being silent, waiting for you to speak to me? That's remarkable for me.
Well, I do believe in ladies first. I know it's an old adage, but...
I'll say hello, Boz.
Thank you, Bobby.
Hi, Bobby.
Hi, Daddy.
I know that always before you come on the air with us, I send you some emails and you send me some and we decide what we'd like to talk about. And, of course, right now, Washington is the big topic. There's no doubt about that. But I did find something about Social Security. Now, I know there's a whole lot of meetings going on today with both Democrats and Republicans in Congress, in the White House, et cetera, et cetera. But whether or not these particular statements about Social Security come to fruition, which I certainly hope that they don't, because I think all four of us are involved in Social Security in one way or another, as are many of our listeners. But anyway, there is a website, and it's called socialsecurityworks.org, socialsecurity-works.org. And they had sent out an email today, and they started out by saying that the federal government's being held hostage by a band of Republican extremists who want to radically reshape our country. And, of course, we know what's been going on about the health care law and that, but this is what I want our listeners to know, and I think you've also seen this too, Boz and Dottie, and that is that there are 50 House Republicans. They are led by Representative Reed Ribble of Wisconsin, just sent a letter to Speaker Boehner urging him to make cuts to Social Security benefits before the debt ceiling is raised and the government is reopened. And yesterday morning, Paul Ryan published an op-ed asking for the same thing, cuts to Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid in exchange for an increase to the debt ceiling. And Representative Ribble's ideas about Social Security sounds like something out of the Romney-Ryan playbook. For example, they want to raise the retirement age. They want to slash the annual cost of living adjustments with a new formula known as chained CPI. And they want means testing for Social Security recipients. Now, I think that should strike fear into the heart of everybody over the age of, what shall I say, 65. And what do you think, Dottie?
I think that he is looking at the people who paid in all their lives and saying you don't deserve as much as you get. Now, those two things don't sit well with people. And this is from a guy who doesn't get Social Security, doesn't need it, and will never need it.
He will never know what it is to depend on Social Security
for your
welfare. Yeah, exactly. What do you think, Boz?
Let me go a little broader even than that. This whole mess in Washington, and mess is the appropriate word for it, is, I'm going to sound terribly partisan here, and I hate doing that on the air, but doggone it.
Oh, go ahead.
This business of trying with Obamacare to demolish a law that's already in effect by holding the government at gunpoint is just plain wrong. This idea of throwing these major possibilities for change of Social Security in the middle of the attitude on Capitol Hill is ridiculous.
I would certainly agree, wouldn't you, Bobby?
Yeah, hey, Boz, you sound like a FDR Democrat.
Well, maybe he is.
Hey, Boz, you know, I may have my volume up here, but I tell you, your voice sounds just like it did 15, 20 years ago when you brought us the WSAZ Evening News.
You think it does, huh?
Yeah, it's powerful. Sounds great.
My understanding of who I was then and who I am now does not leave much room for comparison.
Well, you're one of my favorites. Ernie Anderson said he used to sit on his father's knee and watch the news and take it in when you were giving out the Tri-State News.
Well, we know that you're a senior citizen, Boz, but I'm not sure that you're that old.
Hey, Boz, on this, and Dottie, what do you think of the latest proposal to try to get the government functioning again and get this debt ceiling crisis under control that has been rolled out by Speaker Boehner and now is under consideration by the White House?
You mean the minor changes in small amounts and a bunch of them? Is that what you're thinking of?
No, what I think has been advanced is to extend the debt ceiling deadline 6 weeks till November
22nd.
In exchange for talking about a number of issues that are in the budget, but also keeping the government shutdown. That's been proposed by the Republicans.
All right, I'll try to say this briefly, and then the three of you will just jump in, and you probably won't hear me again in the half hour.
Oh, come
but
on.
Promises, promises.
Melodious voice, go ahead.
The point is, this has no business. We have no business trying to simply deal with the debt ceiling by throwing a zillion different angles to it. Let's deal with the debt ceiling. There is no question we have to amend the debt ceiling. We've got to do that, or we just collapse in front of the whole world.
Oh, no, the whole world collapses.
All right, mm-hmm. The world collapses,
yeah,
with it. But I just watched a really significant economist talking about what really could happen down the road very quickly if we default. And it's scary. Now, why would we even consider such a thing? Let's do the absolute essential debt ceiling change and then start worrying about everything else.
Well, you have just demonstrated why those extremists are doing it. You think it is unthinkable. Therefore, you'll give in to anything to avert it.
I'm not going to give in, but I do think it's unthinkable.
Well, that's
well,
I
right. do think that the debt ceiling will be raised, maybe at the last minute. On the other hand, of course, I thought that at the last minute, the government would not shut down.
That's right.
I do believe that right now, even before we get to a week from today, the 17th, and the debt ceiling deadline, we need to reopen government. We need to get things up and running again. There's too many people suffering.
Oh, we've had some tragedies like those veterans who came home from the war and their families couldn't go to the airport to meet them.
Right.
Yeah.
And then all of those, the specialty items, like the veterans coming home and like the medical treatments for special diseases that undergoing now that had to stop. Now, don't tell me that some of those people, some of those congressmen staffs didn't know exactly what would be involved here, and they were willing to do it anyway.
Why should they worry? They're all getting paid. I mean, they're all working. Why
and
worry?
And they're going to be paid the rest of their lives.
Yeah, so why worry about the WIC, the Women, Infants, and Children program in North Carolina, which has been shut down? I mean,
right.
Little kids.
Or West Virginia, 50,000 people.
Yes, see, you know.
That's right.
Hey, Boz, this whole thing of using the debt ceiling as a hostage to get certain changes made in the budget is unprecedented. It's never been done before, and there are actually Tea Party Republicans who are saying, well, this has never been done. It might work out okay. Let's try it. I mean, this is an attitude.
Yeah, but you know something that was once a long time ago?
What was that?
They said, we'll close down the government rather than give up our slaves. And you know what happened. We had a war.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the other thing that I really think that this thing is going to go over the cliff.
Do you?
I don't think the president can afford to say, okay, open the government and we'll raise the debt ceiling for 6 months if you'll come and talk with us. Because what that will do, Gene and Bob and Donnie, it will set a precedent for future presidents that Congress can say to the chief executive of the country, we're not going to give you this. Bills that we already owe, unless you agree to this. That's a kind of situation that no president should be faced
with. You're a practicing political leader, so you do understand this much better than I.
Did you say an ostracized political leader? What did you say there, Bob?
No.
He's serious.
I was applauding you. But, Bob, how can the president, couldn't the president simply say, we must extend the debt limit and keep the country solvent?
No, it requires a congressional vote.
Well, some people say that it doesn't, that the Constitution allows the president to do that.
Yeah, that's open-ended, and if he were to do that, the Tea Party crowd would immediately begin an effort to impeach him. That's part of what they're saying.
Good luck.
But the idea on this, that these issues should be separate. That you shouldn't tie in what things you're gonna fund and what you're not going to fund,
exactly.
Or what you're going to fund at all. You need to get this behind you, and I think the president has made it clear. If we get the government open, we raise the debt ceiling, as we always have done, then I'll talk with you about anything.
Mm-hmm.
What's so hard to
think
about
he has
that?
Made it clear. And, Dottie and Boz, I need to take a short break here. We'll just be a couple of minutes, so stay with us, if you will, please. This is Tri-State Viewpoint, and our guests are Dottie and Boz Johnson in the studio, Bobby Nelson and myself, Gene Dean. Give us a couple of minutes, and then we'll be back with you. And, of course, as always, if you'd like to call us, we're at 304-399-8255 or 1-877-420-8255. This is Super Talk, 94.1 FM and AM 930.
This is Tri-State Viewpoint on Super Talk 94.1 FM and AM 930.
Hey, welcome back to the Tri-State's greatest and most innovative talk show with outstanding guests, including the Honorable C. Bosworth Johnson and Dorothy Dottie. Dottie, what was your maiden name?
Wrench.
Who?
Wrench, like a right-handed wrench.
Oh, I almost thought of a Halloween term there. Anyway, I want to ask to change the pace here a little bit, Gene. I went back and checked a little bit on the careers of Boz and Dottie, and
okay.
You talk about a couple people who have not only greatly contributed to this community, but I want to talk to them a little bit about Marshall.
All right,
Dottie
let's do
was
that.
Chair of the speech department there for many years. Mm-hmm. Boz taught there. He covered Marshall. First off, Dottie, should I call her Dottie or Dorothy? I mean, all of her.
Call her
you
Dottie.
Can call me Dottie.
Okay. Mrs. Johnson. But,
otherwise, you have to call me Dorothy R. Johnson. Dr. Johnson.
Oh, that's right. Yes, sir. And what about what's your comment on the recent changes over in Marshall in combining what speech and journalism and all of that into one?
No. They combined journalism and the fine arts, which is a pretty peculiar combination.
Yes, yes.
That's a gracious way to put it.
Well, I've heard similar comments about that. You're right.
It's very. I won't use the word irrational if I can think of a synonym.
I wonder whose idea it was. Where did it come from? Should I guess?
Well, it is not alone. It is not unique to Marshall.
Oh,
and this gets our son involved. You may know Rob's a graduate of Indiana University.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And the Indiana University Journalism Building is named for Ernie Pyle.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Annie Anderson.
No,
Ernie Pyle. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And now they are moving Indiana U's famous School of Journalism, the Ernie Pyle School of Journalism, into fine arts and doing away with the building. And the alums of Indiana are furious, and I don't blame them.
No. Well, I thought speech was involved there because, Dottie, you were the chairman of that department for what?
Well, now, wait a minute. A long time ago, before I retired, the person who was then dean, and I won't name him, stole the broadcasting curriculum from communication and gave it to journalism so that journalism would not be would not jeopardize its accreditation.
I see. Well, I know from from what I've heard of your chairmanship that you were a pretty strong disciplinarian, and you insisted on correctness, efficiency, and your students came out well versed, and a couple outstanding ones that I think you had during your career there was Billy Crystal and a guy named Joe Johns that we see on TV right now.
That's right.
Oh, yes, definitely.
To say nothing of Gene Dean's son.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Well, you know, when I was taking...
He'd be amazed to hear you say that, Dottie.
Hey, Dottie, I had speech, I believe, from McCubbin. Is that right? Professor McCubbin, does that ring a bell?
I'm going to interrupt both of you just here for a minute.
I can't remember what his real name was.
Oh, okay.
Let me say something here. There's the strangest thing going on in our director's studio, our producer's studio.
Okay.
The maestro is there. Ernie, I cannot see, but they're both crawling around on the floor looking under the desk, and there's a caller trying to get through, and, oh, here comes Ernie.
He dropped his conductor's baton. That's what they're looking for.
All right. Now, I truly apologize for interrupting
all
of you. But
we were just talking about some of the speech professors, but I did take speech from them, but Boz, is it Dave? Dave is on the line. We have a caller. I thought it was Dave McCubbin. Hey, do you mind if we take a call, Dottie and Boz?
Go ahead.
Okay.
Hey, this is turning into kind of a fiasco anyway. So, Dave, would you like to join in the conversation? We're a little crazy today, but that's okay.
Yeah, please say something intelligent.
All you guys are crazy every day.
Uh-oh.
All right, Dave,
Go ahead, Dave.
Your mind?
I just want to make a comment as a journalism alumnus. I don't understand this combination either. It doesn't make any sense, but there's so many things wrong with Marshall right now, it's hard to even know where to begin. But one of the things that really bugs me, I know that in the School of Journalism right now, they need two pieces of equipment desperately, and it's like $3,000, and they can't get the money. Meanwhile, you know, they're taking money out of their budget. Everybody's taking across-the-board budget cuts. And I know if you say anything about sports at Marshall, they'll say, oh, that's a different budget. Don't worry about that. That's something else, you know. But when you have to drive by that big indoor, you know, practice field, and you have to drive by the soccer field, and then you turn on the radio, which after you guys, I start talking about this stuff, about how they need a baseball field, and they need this, they need that. And I know Marshall's spending much more than any peer institution in this region.
Hey, Dave, what's your question here? Dave.
Didn't have a question.
I'm making a comment.
He's going,
leave him alone, Bobby. Go ahead, Dave.
I have to drive past Marshall. They may shoot my tires out.
Well, if you don't shut up, I may shoot your tires out.
I'll serve tea.
All right, go ahead,
Dave. Go ahead. We're sorry.
No, I'm just saying. What do y'all think about this? I mean, I understand the whole sports thing, but come on, you know. I mean, when you have to go buy these millions of dollars worth of buildings popping up right and left, you can't get $3,000 for two important pieces of equipment you need in order to teach your classes. And what are you supposed to think? You know.
Well, I'm going to get in trouble, but I'm going to go ahead with it anyway. The other side of that sports issue is sports does have a particular place in the heart of a lot of people, and if you assess very carefully, you will find that some very substantial business people in this town are giving substantial amounts of money to athletics. Whether they're giving to the academic programs or not, I do not know. But there is a lot of outside money that goes into sports, and you don't normally see it going into academics. And that's the fault of the community, not of Marshall.
Well, it is the fault of some members of the media, because a few months ago I interviewed Chuck Landon. You know, he writes for the Herald-Dispatch, and according to Chuck, if it weren't for sports at Marshall, oh, Marshall would just crumble away.
Well, that's because he's among those people who only pay attention to sports.
And we have had a former president of the university who pretty much expressed the same view.
I'm not blaming Marshall specifically, but I'm saying there's a problem with priorities, a problem of attitude.
And I'll agree to that.
But who establishes the priorities, though? Who is responsible for that? It starts at the top.
Well, that's an interesting point, because who is in charge? You've got a president, but the president reports to not only his own board, but to a board for statewide higher education, WVU and Marshall. It is spread a long way around.
I want to ask Dave what he thinks about this. Dave, is there anything that can be done to change this situation?
I think people who are interested in academics need to start speaking up and raising hell about it. I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, we got almost $1 billion in a rainy day fund. It seems to me like it's raining out. When you can't get $3,000 worth of important equipment you need for the School of Journalism, then, you know, what is our priority? It seems like they have plenty of money to buy a new Marcos outfit and, you know, to build practice fields and this and that and the other. And we always are able to do that. Why can't we fund academics at least a little bit better? I mean, come on. I don't want to say something else, too. It's not just Marshall. This is a nationwide problem. I saw a map of the United States, and they had the states colored, and they showed what is the highest-paying public position in each state. And all but two or three, it was a coach.
Oh, I'm sure.
That's correct. I saw the same map yesterday.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of truth to that, that a lot of these funds are earmarked for specific purposes. But the fact of the matter is, Dave, you have one point there, I agree. The faculty at Marshall, after that sweep of fees, voted no confidence in the president by about a 70% margin. But within hours after that, the Board of Governors gave a unanimous vote of confidence to the president. And since then, it's been kind of quiet. Maybe they are trying to get together because another cut has already been announced by the governor next year for next year's budget, 7.5%.
You know, Dave, you have raised a very, very interesting topic, and I am going to assume, and you don't have to confirm or deny, but I assume that you're involved in the academic side of Marshall. And I think maybe, Dottie and Boz, next time we're on the air together, this would be a really good subject to enter on. What do you think?
Oh, good.
We'd be glad to.
Okay.
I'd like to see it talked about in depth.
All right.
Good.
Tune in a couple of weeks from now or every day, and we'll get with you. Thank you for calling, Dave.
All right.
And Dottie and Boz, thank you for being with us this afternoon. We are, of course, coming up to our news break, so we'll have to say goodbye. But thanks for being with us, and talk to you in a couple of weeks. This is Tri-State Viewpoint on Supertalk 94.1 FM and AM 930. We'll be back in just a few minutes, so please stay with us.
You're listening to Tri-State Viewpoint on Supertalk 94.1 FM and AM 930.
Hey, welcome back to Tri-State Viewpoint. We're now in the second part of our show. Very interesting topic and a nice subject sitting right here to my left. He's going to be introduced by the young lady to my right.
Whenever anyone calls me a young lady, I realize how old I am.
You're young at heart. You're young at heart.
Okay, I'll accept that. Bobby lets me have the first word. I thought that women only got the last word, but thank you for the first word, Bobby. Because the maestro, Kimo Furumoto, of the Huntington Symphony Orchestra, has always come on with me before we have a concert, whether it's a Pops concert, like we've had three wonderful concerts in the summer on the riverfront.
Yes.
Or the winter season, and we have four concerts coming up during the winter season at the Keith Albee Theater.
Yes.
And the first one is this Saturday at 8 o'clock, and I want to tell you, listeners, that, and I know you'll want these as soon as we hear some of the music that's going to be played, we have, courtesy of the Huntington Symphony Orchestra, sets of two tickets that we will be able to give away to you on the air, complimentary tickets. All you will have to do is to call 304-399-8255 or 1-877-420-8255. So give us a call there. Of course, let's see, we've got a long distance number too, don't we?
Yeah, yeah.
1-877-420-8255. So having said that, Bobby, I know you've got some questions for
Kimo. No, I wanted to ask, that's four sets of two tickets, right?
Exactly.
Exactly. And where do they get them? Did they pick them up here?
They call Ernie. Ernie takes their name and telephone number, and then they can pick them up here, here at the studio in downtown Huntington.
Oh, well, that's very convenient, but they need to get them right away. So.
Absolutely. So
I'd like to ask Kimo, or maestro, shall I kiss your baton?
No.
Oh, boy.
Anyway. You have a varied background. I mean, you studied under Leonard Bernstein. You've conducted orchestras in Cincinnati and California. How do you see the musical talent here and the symphony here in the Tri-State area, especially the Huntington Symphony Orchestra? How would you rate them?
Oh, they're wonderful musicians and so versatile. That's one of the great pleasures, because we do this kind of split season. We have the winter season where we do the regular kind of classical repertoire. And then in the summertime, of course, we switch gears a little bit and get into the more popular or pops kind of repertoire, which mm-hmm. includes a lot of the style of big band music. And our musicians are very capable of handling all of those different styles with really a great aplomb.
These are all professional musicians, right?
They are. This is a union orchestra, so we have agreement with the musicians' union, and we work under that, you know, mm-hmm. umbrella. Okay. We do have a core of musicians that are auditioned. We have auditions usually once a year, and for new ones that are coming in to replace positions that have been left vacant.
And some of them are from Huntington, from Marshall, of course.
Yes, we have a number that are on the faculty at Marshall, but they come from all over. They come from Kentucky, they come from Ohio, and you know, Morgantown, Columbus, mm-hmm. Cincinnati, mm-hmm. Lexington, all over.
Well, there goes the first pair of tickets. So if you we've got about three more sets, 304-399-8255, 1-877-420-8255. So we've really got a wonderful symphony orchestra, Bobby. These are professional musicians, and as soon as you hear them, you know that.
And yeah, and in a wonderful setting, the Keith Albee.
They
did some work on that. And maybe for the audience, what's the size of the symphony orchestra in numbers, and why is this called the Birthday Bash?
Okay. Yes. Well, to the first question, we average about 50 musicians on stage. I think we'll have mm-hmm. actually a few more because of the special repertoire that we're doing this weekend. And as to that, it's called a birthday bash because mm-hmm. we are celebrating both of the composers. There's only two composers in the program. Mm-hmm. Richard Wagner, famous German composer. Right. This is his 200th anniversary of his birth this year.
Ah.
So he was born in 1813. And then the English composer Benjamin Britten, we're celebrating the centennial of his birth, so that was 100 years ago.
And he's the one who wrote that wonderful Young Person's Guide to the Orchestra,
yes,
isn't he?
Yes, and we will be performing that, indeed.
Oh, really? Yeah. Tell me a little bit about that. Did you by any chance bring a clip from that piece?
Yes, I have several clips, actually.
Okay.
So why don't we start with some Wagner. Of course, Wagner, he's a great operatic composer, very much of the romantic vein, and so he just, his melodies and his music just has this very grand, opulent feeling about them. That's very much the man and the music.
Great.
And if Ernie weren't busy taking yet another telephone call for our tickets.
So this is what we're going to hear, is this is the overture, or part of the overture to Rienzi. So it's one of his earlier operas that he wrote, and was performed in Paris as well as in Germany during his lifetime.
Okay, but we're not bringing in vocalists, are we?
No.
No, okay.
No, this is all the symphonic gems from Wagner's music.
Okay, mm-hmm. okay, all right.
And I'll have something else about that, too.
Okay, all right. Well, Ernie's trying to do double duty here.
Is it? Yeah. He's got to be an octopus back there with all the buttons.
There we go.
There we go. Wagner is so impressive.
Yes.
And
I should clue you in a little bit with Wagner and why we say he's an operatic composer, and we're not having any singers. Well, really, when you hear Wagner's music and you actually go to an opera of his, a lot of what is going on is symphonic underneath mm-hmm. all that singing. And in fact, most of the real story reading between the lines or listening to the music is really what is happening in an emotional and dramatic sense in the orchestra, and not necessarily the words that are being sung by the singers. The real drama, the real emotions are in the orchestra itself.
In classical opera and all, is it usually built, the structure of it, around a story, or is it just a musical build-up that from the mind of the composer?
Right. Well, opera is really the summation of, you know, pretty much all the arts put together. I mean, music and singing, drama, all of those things. So there is a story. It's theatrical, so there is a plot that's always associated with an opera. Sometimes they can be very, you know, far out, but generally. And Wagner really liked to use a lot of sort of legends, and the whole Ring cycle, for example, is based on the old Teutonic Norse legends.
Well, we certainly want to hear some more of the music that's going to be played on Saturday night, and we want to get some more phone calls in here from our listeners. We've got a couple more sets of tickets left, and the number's 304-399-8255. Or 1-877-420-8255. I think we probably better go ahead and take our commercial break here, and then Maestro, if you'll play us some more music when we come back.
Sure.
This is Tri-State Viewpoint with Bobby and Jean, and our guest Maestro Kimo Furumoto, who will be conducting the Huntington Symphony Orchestra at 8 o'clock on Saturday in the Keith Albee Theater. Stay with us. We'll be right back on SuperTalk 94.1 FM and AM 930.
Now, back to Tri-State Viewpoint on SuperTalk 94.1 FM and AM 930.
Hey, welcome back to Tri-State Viewpoint. Our guest here is Maestro Kimo Furumoto. Is that correct?
Furumoto. You got it.
Well, I have heard that he is very charismatic on the stage. He has a lot of energy. And someone said at one of his concerts that he ended up by himself starting fireworks and being part of it.
I have been known on occasion, yes.
You're a very, very, very creative person. And before we hear the music, unless you're going to introduce,
we've been talking about one of the composers whose birthday will be celebrated on Saturday, Wagner's 200th birthday.
Yeah, and I was saying before that, the people here know a lot about the maestro.
A lot of people may not. But
yeah, maybe we could get a little, because he's had a very interesting background in his education and where he's performed.
Teaches now.
Yeah, let's put him on the stage for 30 seconds.
Maestro.
This is radio, Bobby, not television.
Right.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Oh, just a little bit. Well, you know, I have a variety of jobs in addition to being the music director here in Huntington. I'm also an educator, so I'm a professor of music at California State University Fullerton, which is in Orange County, California. And I conduct the student orchestra there, as well as teach a variety of music courses as well, and some administrative work. So that's sort of the full-time job. And then I also have another community orchestra in that area, in Whittier, which is in the kind of greater Los Angeles area. So.
And you're married to a wife who has a beautiful voice, and you have a talented daughter.
Yes, a little ballerina girl.
And, Ben, you have been very active around the Cincinnati, Ohio area, and at some point you were involved with Ohio University. So you do.
Yes, before moving out to California, it's been quite some time now. I was on the faculty at Ohio University doing similar things in music.
So tell us about the second composer that you're going to introduce on Saturday.
Yes, Benjamin Britten. Well, actually another composer very well known for his operatic works as well. But probably his most important signature work is one that's known as The Young Person's Guide to the Orchestra. So it's one that sort of introduces the orchestra to, not just all kinds of young people, don't have to be age-wise, but anybody who's interested in finding a little bit more about the orchestra.
Right, because it introduces the different instruments of the orchestra.
Right, and what they actually can do and what they bring to it. So it's sort of nice to feature them, and it really is quite a tour de force for each of the different instruments to be focused on in such a nice way.
All right. Well, let's see, can we hear some of them?
Sure.
Thank you.
That was very good, really, the song.
And you may have had a slightly extra long portion of Benjamin Britten, because Ernie's busy showing us a photograph of himself dressed as, was that Superman? I didn't get too close.
That was me.
Oh, that was you as Superman.
Dressed as Superman, flying around the big sandy arena.
Yes, I made my entrance on a Harley Davidson motorcycle and then changed into Superman
Do
along the
some
way.
Do you have some surprises for us on Saturday? You're bound to. I know what you're going to do. You're going to come in covered by a Union Jack, since we're celebrating a British composer.
Oh, that'd be nice.
Britain the Brit.
I guess we have one set of tickets left before we run up.
I think we've got two sets. Yeah, okay. Listeners, give us a call, because you've got just about 8 minutes to get complimentary tickets to Saturday night's concert, 8 p.m. at the Keith Albee, the first of the winter season concerts for the Huntington Symphony Orchestra. You need to call us if you'd like to have a couple of those tickets, 304-399-8255 or 1-877-420-8255. So give us a call right away.
Maestro, the people go to and hear symphonic music, or do you sense that they understand the music and know what it's all about? Because some people get intimidated by classical music, like it's highbrow and all.
Right. I will say it's music that they're really used to listening to, just in a different way. Because if you go to any movie mm-hmm. theater. Mm-hmm. And you enjoy a movie, there is music, and a lot of it is mm-hmm. symphonic music. I mean, think of any of the Star Wars mm-hmm. Movies and the wonderful music of John Williams. Well, John Williams mm-hmm. was a very good borrower of different things, too. So his inspiration goes back to a lot of the wonderful symphonic composers like Richard Strauss, rather, and all those great symphonic composers. So you have it here, and you have it on the television, too. I mean, many times I'm always listening to commercials, like, oh, there's that tune. And no one, of course, realized it. Of course, I've studied all these things, so I know exactly where it comes from.
They don't know the composer of the music or the name.
Right,
but
it's familiar.
They hear it in the movie.
Absolutely.
I just went a couple days ago to see this movie, Gravity, that's out now.
Mm-hmm.
And the first 7 minutes is just silence. It's out in space, and it's music. And it was symphonic music, but you just fell in line with it and got right into the movie. It was really...
Right. So it's familiar. Familiar, I think, to everybody, but now, to present it this way, and now to get to know the people who actually wrote it, too.
Mm-hmm. And I think, as you said, Bobby, people tend to think that a classical concert, like the Symphony's Winter Season, not the Pops, they tend to think that it's extra highbrow and that you have to dress up and, just be really formal. Yeah. It's not that way at all.
Wow.
I mean, you can go wearing your jeans or whatever and just have a good evening.
I wonder how that kind of got in the minds of people. In the early days, was it something you dressed up for? Because when you go to the earlier movies, you'd see when they had the concerts, they were all dressed up.
No.
You're right, though. It isn't something that you have to dress to the tens.
I first came to Huntington, the martial artist series, you dressed up. The women wore long dresses, and there were shirts and coats and ties for the men. And it's just that things have changed.
Things are a little bit different, but, it's all about enjoying the music and coming together as a community. And there's nothing like live music. There's nothing to replace it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You can have the most wonderful sound system, but it's never quite the same as hearing it live.
And part of it is the audience and how they respond very much.
Plus the acoustics. The Keith Albee is a wonderful backdrop for anything. And then they continue to improve it. So it's a wonderful setting.
It really is a gem. And it's still, I look forward to the day when it's back to its really
original glory.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, listeners, if you weren't lucky enough to get any of those complimentary tickets, there are tickets available at the Huntington Symphony Orchestra office, which is downtown on 3rd Avenue, right across from the Big Sandy Superstore Arena. Mm-hmm. And you can go in there and get your tickets, or if you're lucky, there may be tickets available at the door on Saturday night. So
Gene, I went to the Huntington Symphony webpage, and it is really nice. It's very well done, full of information, and actually I think they sell tickets online too.
There you go.
And I will give you their web page at www.huntingtonsymphony.org. HuntingtonSymphony.org.
Wow.
How simple is that?
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, and that's, you don't have to get out of the couch until you get ready to go to the concert.
Yes, we're part of the 21st century.
But I think we just had another set go, Jill,
so
we're down to the last one, folks. You got
four minutes.
Yeah.
Did you have some more music for us, though?
I do have a couple more clips. I have another one by Britton. This is the Courtly Dances. He liked to... He was sort of eclectic, so he kind of brought back some old dances from the Renaissance, but made them for a large symphonic orchestra.
Okay. That is so aptly titled. I mean, you can just see the ladies and the gentlemen in those formal, what would you say, 17th century dresses prancing around.
Right.
That's fun.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
I wanted to get up and dance, but Bobby wouldn't dance with me.
I have a club foot. I only know. No, I love to dance. I really do. And I know you do, too.
Oh, absolutely,
Some of my my dance steps are a little out of... I mean, I do the jitterbug and I do the hopscotch.
Oh, that's good.
But Maestro now...
I have to tell you, they used to call Keith and me Fred and Ginger, so...
Oh, that's great.
But the... you've sold quite a few advance tickets. I understand there's usually for these concerts there's usually a good turnout of people.
Oh,
absolutely. This is a community that loves good music.
Yes.
I mean, it is. And
it's a really important part of our community, I think.
We're so lucky to have you. I mean, you know, you make that trip, what, about 7 times a year?
Yeah,
and
a good many times. But, I do tell everybody, it really is like a second home to me.
Yeah,
and I very much feel that way.
Yeah.
Now, if they don't get this one this weekend, you gave the next one is what, in December?
Let's see. The next one is actually in November. It's November the 7th. And, that's a fundraiser. There'll be tickets available for that. And then the actual concert is December the 14th. It's called A Winter's Delight.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be a fun one, too. Oh, all right. Go ahead,
Ernie. This one needs no introduction.
All right.
We're going to hear... Is this Brittany?
This is Wagner.
Okay, Wagner.
Kimo, you told us that we'd recognize them, and we do. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you very much.
Really look forward to the Saturday evening and the concert. Do come and join us, listeners. It's going to be a lovely evening. Just come and have some fun. Have some dinner downtown, maybe beforehand, and then enjoy the concert.
Yeah. And tickets still available, and you can get them online. Or
online or at the Symphony Orchestra office across from the Big Sandy Superstore Arena. Thank you so much for being with us today. We will be back with you tomorrow here on Tri-State Viewpoint on Supertalk 94.1 FM and AM 930. Our last guest was Maestro Kimo Furumoto, and we're so glad to have him here. And if you want to see him conduct, it's quite a performance, so thanks for listening. Have a wonderful evening.
John Boy and Billy Big Show, morning 6 to 10 on Supertalk 94.1 FM and AM 930 WRBC Huntington, a service of Kindred Communications.